in a world where you get in trouble for lying unless you are playing a worldwide trending hashtag game and gin and tonics have replaced Tylenol for all the cool kids, two women continue their scientific journey to the stars. Just kidding. Their journey to fix things here on Earth. My God, it's full of stars. Hello and welcome to When We Rule the World. I'm Jenny with an I.
I'm Jenny with a Y, and we had a fantastic day today.
We did. We were like the number one worldwide trending hashtag for like forever on our game. Today, we have a fantastic guest. She recently won the Gold Elet Book Award in Science Fiction for her debut novel, Fluency, which also reached number 4 on the Kindle Top 100. Today, we have author Jennifer Fainer Wells, and she's carved out some time out of her busy schedule so that we can chat together today. So, hi, Jen. I'm Jenny with an I. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm Jen with just a J-E-N.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful.
This is going to be awesome. We're very excited because I absolutely loved Fluency. It was super awesome. So let's talk about Fluency. Let's not talk about Fluency. Let me actually read my questions. Let's not talk about Fluency. Let's get to know you. We're all Illinois girls here, and you grew up in rural Illinois. So tell us whereabouts and if you're still here or if you moved.
Yes, I grew up in downstate Illinois, as they like to say in northern part of Illinois. I grew up in a small rural community, 20, 30 minute bus rides to school. That's how rural it was.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So when I went away to college in Illinois, I went to Monmouth College in northwestern Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I met my husband. And he went to graduate school at Purdue, so we moved to Indiana, and that's where we've been ever since.
Oh, okay. So you're still Midwest, technically.
Midwest. It's different, actually. You'd be surprised.
Really? In Indiana, it's different than Southern Illinois?
Subtly different, yeah. It's definitely more conservative here. I mean, it was conservative back home, too, but yeah.
I can't even imagine more conservative
than Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, in Illinois, Chicago tends to take the elections.
Right. That's true.
To a different place. Here, we fight for the blue.
Right.
I can see that. Yeah.
And wasn't that thing with some company or restaurant or something in Indiana decided not to serve gay people or something?
There's new legislation, right?
There was a law, and it's kind of been modified now to make it less demonic, but it's...
Okay. That's a great way of putting it.
That was a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's really bad stuff, so we just try to, we put on blinders, and we live... Where we live, it's a little pocket of a little bit more liberal...
Educated people?
Yeah.
That's mean. Yeah. Sorry, Indiana.
Yeah, no, Indiana is, I haven't really been outside of this area that much. So I tend to be like, but no, it's not like that. And then people are like, but you live in a college town. So,
Right. College towns are totally different.
It's like its own little island.
Yeah, it really
to
is.
Itself. So.
So in Illinois, where, if you don't mind me getting like specific, where exactly where you're at? Because I'm pretty intimately familiar with some southern areas.
Sure. It was actually, the nearest town.
Exactly.
I actually grew up near Highland, Illinois.
Okay.
Which is not far from, it's not really close to anything. It's like 45 minutes east of St. Louis, just off of I-70.
Okay.
And so that's like the best way to tell people.
So were you close to like Vienna and Cairo?
No, that's much farther south.
Okay. That's what I was getting at, because the closer you get to that Missouri border south, it's a very different environment. So you were kind of high enough that I could see how it would be conservative, but not quite the same as
Cairo. It was just basically a farming community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in the middle of cornfields, really. And so, you know, my parents were very conservative, and I'm sure most of our neighbors were, but it did, I don't know, I didn't pay that much attention to it, so maybe I can't really say. But
cool.
I was a kid.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
I loved growing up there. It was great. It was, I was like a wildling.
Just go out and play.
Yeah.
Forever.
I mean, I would just go out, you know, there were woods back behind my house. I rode my bike all over the place. Mm-hmm. I would go hiking through, you know, fields and things, and, you know, it was just crazy. So
that's awesome.
What do they have a term for that now with kids that just go and play?
Free range.
Range kids. So yeah, I think all of us.
My kids are more towards that than most in this area, but yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah. I mean, I'm assuming we're all about the same age here. And
we're just not going to say what that age is.
No, we never do. And we all grew up that way where, you know, you left after breakfast. You came home for lunch if you were hungry.
Uh-huh.
You had to be home for dinner maybe.
Right. Yeah.
And you went outside and you played.
Yeah.
And nowadays you can't really do that.
No.
Not to the extent that we did when we were kids, because there's so many crazies out there.
Well, right. And at least not where we're at, because we're in, you know, right in the middle of suburbia.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty urban.
Right. Yeah. Well, I live in a neighborhood that's pretty safe, and my kid, we have a park across the street. My kids go over to the park all the time, and my oldest is 11. He rides his bike to a friend's house every now and then. I don't worry about it that much. But you know, my kids have, my 11-year-old does have a cell phone. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm a little bit more, it's a different kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. My daughter is 11. And I wish I had an 11-year-old boy instead. I love my daughter, but oh my gosh,
it's different.
It's really hard.
No, no. It's about the same.
Okay.
It depends on the child. Each child.
Well,
my son is really going through some angsty stuff lately, and
I think this is when it hits, though.
Yeah.
You know, they're right on the cusp. Now, I don't know. Is your son in middle school or is he going into middle school?
He's just finishing up fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is my daughter. Yeah.
He's got this persecution complex.
Yes.
And talking to other parents with kids of the same age, I don't think that's uncommon, girls or boys. It's just part of those hormones kicking in at the cusp of the bad.
And the way that their brain thinks. My daughter told me today that the reason she doesn't respect adults' authority is because adults are like the kings and queens and the children are like the serfs and peasants. And I was like, points for using serfs, but seriously?
Your life is so hard. Oh my gosh.
But, you know, it's really, they're at that point where they can start to see adulthood at the end of the, you know, at the end of the tunnel, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they're probably just feeling like anxious and I don't know.
And their body's going through so many changes and the hormones storm.
It's not fun.
No bueno.
I can't wait.
you're not quite there yet.
My oldest is 8, so, and he's such a good boy that I don't think he's going to give me any troubles when he gets to puberty.
I know. We'll talk in a couple years.
When my son was 8.
Yeah, I'm not delusional. That was just kind of a joke.
Okay.
All right. So, Jen, on your website, there's a picture of yourself that looks like your hair is purple.
It is.
Is your hair currently purple or another cool color?
I've been purple for over 3 years, yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
I used to have purple highlights in my hair.
And
it was awesome, but it washed out way too soon. So I am a brunette, very dark hair. And so then she had to bleach my hair first and then do the purple. Is that what you do also?
No.
Oh, okay. Do you have somebody that does your purple for you, or do you go to salon?
I do it myself, but I'm covering up a white streak that I have.
Oh, okay.
And so rather than looking like a skunk, I decided that I would cover it up with purple.
That's perfect.
Because I'm allergic to traditional hair dye.
Okay.
Oh. So I gave up on that. And then I started to feel like I looked like my kid's grandparent instead of their mom. So I decided that I was going to have to do something, and that was just the only really other option. And I feel like I was cool before everybody else because I was doing this before this became a trend. I'm like,
nice. Well,
and I'm just like, now what? So I started to let it grow out. I went like something like 4 months letting the purple grow out, and I hated how old I looked, so I went back.
Good.
I love it.
I so love it's, purple it, hair.
It's not like, you know, you don't look like the comic book character Rogue. It just looked old, which is unfortunate because you could always just say, well, my alter ego is Rogue. What?
Right. I wished that it looked like that, but my hair is curly, so it's kind of just all over the place.
Yeah.
So it never looked like that for me.
So if you're allergic to traditional hair dyes, what do you use to get the purple then?
Well, I'm allergic to the standard, like, brunette, whatever. There's a chemical, I can't think of what it's called. PDT, I think, maybe?
Okay, I'm writing this down.
That's in all traditional hair dyes that are brown.
Oh.
So,
and you can't do that?
I can't do that. I'm allergic to it. And, you know, I'd rather, you know, have smooth skin than blotchy red bumps all the time.
Yeah, so. That's preferable.
I could see that. So I would agree with that.
Yeah. So yeah, so the purple, it was a good alternative for me. And I did pink for a while, and that was fun too.
That would be fun. I wanted to do pink.
I have a bottle of pink hair dye in my cabinet that I've had for like a year now. Because when I started doing derby, that's what I was going to do. I was going to do all the under of my hair
pink.
Hot pink.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I know, you're blonde, and then you could do it.
I could, but I totally chickened out.
All right.
I need to do something.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But I would get, if you're doing the underside of your hair, I would definitely have somebody help you because.
Oh, I could. Yeah, I could help you with that.
Oh, yeah, you totally. Okay,
who am I?
I'm totally doing it.
Okay, good.
I am inspired.
I actually cannot have funky color hair anymore.
Oh, because of your nursing
school? Because I'm in nursing school. And so there's.
What?
I have to cover all my tattoos. I found a company that makes temporary tattoos. To cover the tattoo that you have. And this is skin-colored tattoos.
I
bought a variety pack of all the different skin tones because I didn't know what my skin tone would be.
Okay.
And you can't see it, but I have one right now on the back of my neck.
I'll show you.
Yeah.
All right.
So
I had no idea such things exist.
I know. I didn't either because I just had to do a Google search. I'm like covering up tattoos. And so I did that. And everybody was like, oh, you just wear this shirt. And I'm like, I don't want to add another shirt to my uniform. And then somebody said, hey, there's these tattoos. I'm like, oh, okay, let me try it. So it doesn't cover it all the way, but I think it covers it enough to the point where you can't really see it because it's under my hair and the back of my neck.
Right.
Huh. And the other ones I cover with long sleeves. So.
Being your own boss is awesome.
I can see that.
I know. When I was doing just the prereqs and everything in school, it didn't matter. But now that I'm actually in a clinical setting, they frown upon all these piercings and tattoos and funky colored hair. I mean,
oh, that's a problem.
It is a problem. But attitudes are changing. I mean,
they are.
Lots of nurses and doctors now, you know, they have tattoos and people are kind of being more acceptable to that and accepting of that. And the funky colored hair.
You're a trendsetter.
I know. I gotta get that job first.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, once you get locked into that first job, then just go for it.
And just rip.
I totally will.
Temporary tattoos off. Be like, what?
I'm gonna rip them right off.
I would. I would pay to see that. That would be awesome. Well. This is awesome. I'm having fun. I'm so excited too. Because
good.
I mean, I keep thinking about the book, and I totally want to talk about the book, but we're not going to talk about the book yet.
Okay.
We're going to talk all about you, and then I'm finally going to get to talk about the book. So, I guess the next question is just have you always known that you were and or wanted to be a writer?
Yes. When I was a child, I went to a very small rural school, and the principal of the school sort of took a shine to me and coddled me a lot. And he would do things like bring me into his office and show me how awesome my test scores were.
Nice. Like,
and he trying to encourage me and he wanted me to make something of myself, you know?
Yeah.
And, cause you know, it was a rural environment. A lot of kids just grew up to do whatever their parents did.
Right.
Farming. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. Or working factories or whatever. So, he always encouraged me. And when one day, you know, I told him I was a voracious reader as a child. I went through like a book a day,
yes.
Just read and read and read and mm-hmm. read and read to the point where I would get in trouble for reading both at school and
at home. Yes. Yep. We can relate to this.
Yep.
So, you know, I told him that I wanted to be a writer when I grew up. So he found someone to bring to talk to my class.
That's awesome.
How cool
and
is that?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember like asking them a bunch of questions. I was in eighth grade at the time and I was already very sure that that's what I wanted to do. And then I remember I was so practical at the time. I've always had this terrible practical streak. And I was like, so what if you can't make it as a novel writer? Then what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, and that's the guy, a good question.
And the dude was like, well, you can... He told me all about like writing articles for magazines, mm-hmm. journalism, and then technical writing, which, you know, people do
so boring
for science. And mm-hmm. I was like, I could do one of those if I can't write novels. So I had like, you know, backup plans.
That's
and by
awesome.
The time I went to high school and college, I had lost some of the confidence in my abilities, and I had stopped writing as much.
Mm. Yep, that happens.
And in college, I wrote a lot of poetry, and I was the editor of the literary magazine at my small college. And but I was really active in theater at the time. That was my sort of outlet for creativity
yes.
at that point. And but I remember like writing like it was a small liberal arts college, so we wrote. We wrote papers even in the science classes. I had to take a lot of philosophy courses, mm-hmm. a lot of literature courses. So I was always writing papers.
Sure.
And I remember often thinking, wow, I really wish I could be writing something creative right now instead of this.
I hear you.
And I just went through. But that was all valuable writing time.
Right.
I was learning to, you know, express myself and articulate points and things.
Yeah.
And so that was all good. After college, I started novels like I don't know how many times. When laptops first came out, I was an early adopter.
Uh-huh.
And I had a laptop that I toted around like a total dork and just wrote wherever I was. But
the Starbucks. You just pop it out.
Well, there weren't Starbucks back then.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The local diner.
Yeah. So I actually took it to work with me and like wrote on breaks and things. But
nice.
So this like 10-pound laptop.
I had one too.
The
but
brick.
Anyway, but there were a lot of things I didn't understand about plotting a novel. And I would just sort of reach the middle of a story and like peter out and mm-hmm. not be sure what I was going to do. You know, how was it going to end? What was supposed to happen next? And I would read books on craft and I would get frustrated because I didn't understand what some of it meant.
Yeah.
And I don't know, some of it was maybe just experience. Some of it was maybe patience or lack of it. And I just sort of, after a while, I just gave up. And then I started a series of like every creative thing I could think of that wasn't writing. So I was I was making handmade wool rugs.
Ooh,
I was knitting.
I love to knit.
I tried everything. Every kind of fiber art. I made some really awesome quilts too.
Mm-hmm.
But none of these things completely and totally fulfilled that itch
creative
to
outlet.
Create.
Yeah.
Right.
And then when my kids were, I think my youngest was probably 2 or 3 and didn't need the constant supervision and was mm-hmm. still taking naps. One day I just sort of realized, wow, I am going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I am literally going crazy because I had no creative, well, I was knitting at the time, but it's not the same. And I was just like, my brain was going into overdrive. I was like, I had like special, like vacuuming, design layout. I had dishwasher loading protocol.
I had that too.
Special sorting things for the laundry. Like,
yep.
Oh no, that can't go in with that. Oh,
mine was the sippy cup lids. Like, I had to make sure that they were all organized in a certain way and that they fit on the cup in a certain way. Like, I lined up that arrow and the little spout thing. Like, I was finding things to, like,
organize. Yes.
Exactly. Because your brain just starts to, raising kids is great. It's wonderful. It's definitely worth my time. Mm-hmm. But I was also just sort of, like, lacking some kind of stimulation. Mm-hmm. And so with the day that I realized that was happening, I immediately sat down and started writing a story.
Okay.
And that day changed my life forever. And I wrote some fan fiction, actually, and it people really liked it, and that boosted me.
Now, was this the Stargate story?
Yes. Okay. I wrote that.
And what is that called? I haven't found it. I want to find it.
Heart out. It's on my website. Yeah, I just wrote my little heart out. There's no real plot. It just meanders. But the thing was, I was having fun. I was doing something creative. And then when I finished that, I said, okay, now it's time to really lock this down and do what I was meant to do, what I always wanted to do. And so I just voraciously started reading books on craft. And this time, they made sense to me. Mm. And this time, I was able to process the information and turn it into something useful. And so that's when I sat down and plotted out Fluency, which I felt like was not a very ambitious novel. I felt like it was like a practice novel, really. Mm. And it thought that I would be writing maybe 5-6 novels before I really got good enough to get noticed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just sitting back and I am just in complete awe and stunned. And it almost feels like I've been dreaming since last June because I cannot believe how popular it's become and how much people love it. And so it's been wonderful. It's really been quite a trip. So that's my artistic journey.
I love it. We can completely relate to that stagnation, that emptiness that you get where it's like
there's got to be something more.
Yeah, you're putting everything into your children and your family and then you're going, okay, but
lose yourself.
Where am I? Where do I fit in this? What am I supposed to be doing? That's when we both kind of hit that point, we started doing Girls Night. Mm-hmm. Which isn't necessarily creative, but it was just a chance to get the hell out of the house, away from everyone's needs, and be able to sit down and have a conversation without someone interrupting them or having any kind of expectations on us and drink and do whatever. And
exactly. And that is crucial. Mm-hmm. It's crucial for your mental state. I mean, And I have since gone on to do those kinds of things for myself. Whereas before, I had practically become like a shut-in. I was just so, invested in my children. I didn't even have a babysitter until about 2 years ago. Wow. I literally never went out. My husband and I never went on dates. We took the kids everywhere. And finally that changed. I started to give up some of that control and just relax a little bit and let myself be Jen, just be myself. And, become more than just a mom, more than Harry and Charlie's mom, Jen Wells again.
Exactly. So.
I think, all three of us were there.
Yeah.
And right around the same time.
It's funny. I mean, I want to get there. I'm kind of at that place where what you said about not having the expertise to figure out how to complete a novel.
Right.
That's kind of where I'm at ever since I was a kid. I mean, it's so funny. We've talked about this, like when we were creeping on your pages and looking up information so we could sound smart and have a really nice interview with you.
Awesome.
We were talking about how it's like you're the third gen, like for real. Like
I said this when you went to go get your drink earlier, but I was like, I feel like she's the triplet that got separated at birth.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because there's me over on this side who I'm like kind of like the disorganized and, I did theater in college. It was my thing. When I was a kid, writing, that was what I was going to do. I wrote all these short stories. I actually got to go downstate for the Young Authors Contest for this story that I wrote.
Oh my God.
It was pretty awesome. Too. Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wasn't that the most amazing experience ever?
I think I met Judy Blume or something. I mean, oh. I can't remember. Like, at the time, I didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
But it was just like, oh, okay. I mean, I just remember, like, I remember meeting this woman in a hallway and, like, my teacher being like, oh, my
like,
God.
Super excited.
Oh, oh my awesome. God. It's her.
That is so cool. I have my bag. I still have my little black bag from the Young Authors Conference. That's like my magic keepsake that I hold on to.
Well, we'll have to talk afterwards about books that I recommend for people who are trying to get to that place.
That would be awesome. That would be totally awesome. Yep. Yeah. So then there's that. And then now I hear you talk about like the control and like the, you know, how you have your life organized. And I'm like, and that's totally Jenny.
That
like,
is totally me. Her. I am a type A personality bordering on OCD. Like I have to have all my ducks in a row and the backup plans and, you know, everything in order.
Yeah. Now I'm totally disorganized since I've become an author.
Oh, see.
Forget about it.
Dude. I think it's part of the job. It's like a job requirement.
Yeah.
It's been crazy. The transition from like me doing everything for everyone to me working full time, like I'm working more than full time hours. So I can't even tell you how many hours I work a day. And I basically from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed and I'm always, if I'm not writing, I'm doing something related to either marketing or social media or, you know, it's all related. It's all interconnected. It's hard to tell where one thing ends and the next thing begins. It's all, I enjoy it all, every single aspect of it. I enjoy it, but I am always working. And so I'm just like, and laundry. The kids can learn to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, your son's 11. He can totally learn. Yeah. I keep threatening that to my daughter, and I think I'm just going to have to draw the line and be like, that's it. I'm tired of washing your stuff, putting it in your room, and then having you throw it back in the laundry basket. I'm not doing that anymore.
Yep.
We're done.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting transition.
So, Jen, do you find it difficult to balance all of your responsibilities then? What are some adjustments you had to make in your personal life to accomplish everything that you want to accomplish?
Delegating. I'm still learning to ask my husband to help with things.
I have that trouble too. Yeah. Asking for help.
We had a really nice interchange the other night where I was like, hey, I'm going to have to pay the bills after dinner. Do you think you could do the dishes? And he was like, of course. And I was
nice.
Like, yay.
I should ask for help more often. Oh my gosh.
No kidding. And then I'm sitting there doing the bills and I can't find, you know, the fiber optic bill. So I'm like, would you mind going to look for that? Of course I don't mind. You're sitting there doing the bills. I can do that.
Excellent.
Wow. Wow. Mind blown.
And how many years have you been married to now you just realize this?
On June 3rd, it will be 20 years.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yep. I'm that old.
Well, Jenny with an I is got 16 years already, yeah. And then I will have 16 in August. So we're not too far from
each other. We're right around there. So that's I'm very glad that you're finding it becoming a positive thing. You know that it sounds like you have a really good support structure.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely. And I have lots of friends that are writers, so that helps too. And you know, if I reach a rough spot in my writing, there's always someone to bounce ideas off of. And that usually is really productive. So there's, you know, yeah. And my kids are really, they're stepping up. So everybody in my life is stepping up. And I hired a maid.
I did too. We talked about this. I don't know if you heard this podcast, but I talked about my guilt for hiring a mate because I want to be able to do everything myself.
Oh,
and to me,
bad.
Yeah, I know.
I clean sometimes for 3 hours before the maid comes.
Me too.
That's a thing.
And here's my story from this week. I was in the shower when my maid showed up. Like we had a miscommunication on time, and I thought she was coming at 1 o'clock, and she showed up at 11:30. And so I wanted to make sure I had things picked up before she got here. Only she like surprised me, and my son let her in the house. And I get out of the shower, and I walk downstairs, and she's here, and she brought a friend, and there's two of them, and I'm like, hi, gals. Oh my God.
I didn't know you were coming. So sorry.
That's funny.
Yeah, I actually asked my maid the last time she was here. I was like, because I was cleaning we were parallel cleaning. Like,
me too.
She's in one room and I'm like in the other. Like, I'm like, she's gonna vacuum this room. I better pick up all this crap on the floor.
And that's exactly what I do too.
And she was. I was like, do your other clients parallel clean? Uh-huh. And she's like, no, you're my youngest client. The rest of my clients are like 85.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, yeah, they're naturally tidy. They don't. Yeah.
They don't have children, young children running amok in the house,
and making it harder for the maid to do her job.
Right.
I feel bad sometimes because I'm just like, oh my God. Like, she needs to get to the kitchen sink and it's completely full of dishes.
I know.
That's
so embarrassing.
That's a problem that I look forward to having.
I apologize to my maid too. Every time I go, thank you so much for cleaning my house. Thanks for bringing a friend, because you know you needed help today because my house is that dirty. And then that morning that she showed up early, I had already done all the dishes in the sink. But from breakfast. So if she had, if I hadn't done that, right away, I was planning on doing it later. I was like, oh, no, just do it now. Thank God I did.
Right.
But yep. I usually go in another room that she doesn't go in. Like, the family room, I told her, please don't go in here. That's too much work for you. I will handle this room, because that's the children's domain. So while she and her friend are cleaning the rest of my house, I'm in that room cleaning up my kids' mess at the same time.
That's so funny. All right. Can we talk about the book now? You want to talk about the book now?
Yay! Or do
you
have a
different question? Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lead-in question to talk about all sci-fi stuff that we love.
Well, we can do that.
Sure. What do you want to know?
All right. Well, we want to talk about all of our sci-fi love, especially Farscape, because...
Oh my God.
I am a huge Farscape fan.
Same I am here. Too. I need a rewatch badly.
I have all of the seasons on DVD.
I bought them all. I haven't watched them yet. I need to. My husband and I, there's a lot of good sci-fi on TV right now, and we don't watch a lot of TV. So it's been hard to fit that in, because I really want to do a rewatch. But
Well, and now you're working Moya, and writing.
Oh my God, Moya.
Moya. Oh.
Feels, so many feels.
I know.
And
Rigel was always my favorite.
They did love Rigel.
No other sci-fi show like Farscape. Actually.
No, there wasn't. Isn't.
And I just remember, I didn't watch it when it was on network television. So we watched it. I think we watched it reruns or something like that. And then we knew it was on DVD. So then we went out and bought the seasons. And then we got I think it was season 4 when they had that cliffhanger.
Mm.
And then it's that's it. It didn't get renewed. I'm like, are you serious?
Oh yeah.
What are we gonna do now? And thank God they did the movie.
I hate the Sci-Fi Channel for all that.
I know.
So many times. Oh my God.
Sci-Fi, you're on my list.
They are.
They're on my shit list.
Yeah, for real. And and it was the Jim Henson Company, I think, that did all the puppetry for that.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it was so amazing.
It was so good.
It was. For its time, it was.
It was ahead of its time.
That was really before CG became really well developed. So it was something else.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Before then they were limited to, what Star Trek was doing, where it's like you've got the fake planet and that's not even really CG, and then you got Next Generation was a little bit. I think I don't really know. But no, I loved Farscape. I'm wearing my Firefly t-shirt right now.
Oh, Firefly was another one. Fox.
Uh-huh.
You're on my list too.
They are.
Yes. Yep.
Oh,
yeah, that was fun. That one I missed. I did not know that one existed until years later, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I got deep into sci-fi fandoms, and I was like, "What's this? What is this you speak of?" And so then I quickly became a brown coat.
Nice,
absolutely, yeah.
So I own all of that on DVD too. But and we watched that several times because. Damn, that's good.
It's so good.
And then I was like, okay, what else has Joss Whedon done?
I know, right?
Yep.
And then
Buffy.
I was, Buffy. That was
Angel.
A show I never got into. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we watched some of Buffy. I haven't gotten as far into it as I'd like to.
It's 11 seasons of Buffy.
There's
a lot
of Buffy.
And the early stuff is not as good. And
no,
I'm just
it's
like,
not.
But I have to start from the beginning.
You have to.
It's kind of hard. You got to choke down, some of the harder stuff, and then it gets better. And then it kind of peters out. So it peaks. somewhere between season 5 and 7.
I think the last season was really good, though.
It was all right. I mean, I watched it all, and then I watched Angel, and then I watched Dollhouse, which is weird. I mean, it's good, but weird.
I watched that. That was one of the shows that I watched, you know, when it was on.
Yeah, me too.
And cool. We were like on the edge of our seat every week. Mm-hmm, and again, we were robbed because they just ended it too soon. You never got to bring. I was sure they were going to do that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. Because the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was so weak.
Yeah, I thought so.
So many people just peeled off and were like, done, done, done. No superheroes, done. And I was like, no, it's not about superheroes. It's about the team. It's about Coulson.
It's about the support staff, finally.
Like, yeah, exactly. And I stuck with it, and I was glad I did.
Oh, man, awesome. Now I'm going to have to catch up. Because
my husband Brian still watches Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Does he?
Yeah, I put in my earplugs and I read my book.
And there are more superhero stories now. Lady Sif has made a few appearances.
Oh, mm-hmm. Good. I saw the one episode with her. But yeah, I finished season one and then I started season two. Spoilers, if you haven't seen it, don't listen. Go la la la. Because I'm about to say like when they find out that the one agent that is adorable is the bad agent.
Oh, and I'm my like, God, what? That's so awesome.
And I'm like,
for a long time, I was like, is he a triple agent or a double agent?
I know, right? And I'm going, So then I got mad and I haven't picked it back up. So.
Oh, you need to.
Okay. I'm totally going to now.
Yeah, Brian says it's pretty great.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be like Lost where they like just introduce a bunch of stuff and then don't know how to resolve it later. I don't even get me started
on Lost.
A little bit more of a vision.
Cool.
Show. So. Just keep at it.
All right. I'm excited.
Ask your question now.
Now I can ask my question.
Yes.
Okay. So let me just say, I am an avid sci-fi reader. I read a lot of different things. I have children, so I've had to take a break somewhat, and I haven't read as many things as I want to. But part of that is because I think it's a really difficult genre at times, because if you do too many things that are like something else, and you get people that are pissy and dumb, and if you don't know where you're going and you do too grand of a different type of realm and
universe, it's not relatable.
I mean, right. So it's a hit or miss genre. And what I loved about your book, because here's the thing, like one of my favorite writers is actually Orson Scott Card for his sci-fi stuff, and I followed the entire Ender series, and I'm ticked off because I love him, but I think he's sold out a little bit and is just pumping out novels in that universe that don't necessarily bring anything more to the table.
Right.
He's just doing it because there's a demand for it.
Sure.
But I still read him.
Well, he still has to eat.
I know, right? Right. And I'm like, that's fine. Do your thing. It's still more than I've done. So who am I to criticize? But I loved like the Ender series. And I don't know. I just like stuff. I saw your book pop up on the Kindle list, and that's how I got it. The description of it made me just go, wow, this sounds amazing.
Oh.
But good. I mean, whatever it was, the description it made me kind of go, oh, that sounds really good. Okay. So and then I admit I read it because it said book one in the series. And I'm like, oh, good, because I don't typically like to read anything unless I know that the series is there, because I will sit there and I will tear through a book in a couple of days, usually a day, depending on how long it is. And then I'm like, okay, next one. Okay, next one. Because I'm like, I need my resolution.
Oh, I'm the same way.
So I'm like, oh, good, there's a series. I'm reading this. So I started reading it. And I within the first 5 pages, I fell in love with this book. Yay. I'm like, this is genius. And then every little twist, every little extra that you add, I mean, I know I'm fangirling over here, but seriously, I haven't read a book like that in a really long time where I was engaged from page one and was engaged the whole way through, loved the resolution. And one of the things that I absolutely love the most is that it's finally a sci-fi story with a strong female character, you know, and she's not Ellen Ripley, you know?
Right. Right.
And she's
not helpless.
Every woman. That was my goal, is to make her relatable to any educated woman who, I mean, that was my audience. Right. That I was, what's hilarious about that is very few women have read this book.
Are you serious?
Are you kidding me?
90 to 95% of my readership is male.
Wow.
What?
And I've been trying to figure out how to get into, how to get the female, you know, the sci-fi fans that are female to read it.
Right.
And everything that I've, everybody that I've talked to has said that I would need to change the cover. And, oh man, I don't know. That's,
why I got wouldn't to, agree with that.
I yeah, got why would Stephen you need Martinier to do that cover, who is one of the most famous sci-fi artists of all time. And I'm just like, really?
No, don't change the cover.
But I don't know how to, else to get it. So I've actually been doing Facebook ads, which have not been very successful. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. I did do a blog tour that helped, but I need to figure out more stuff to do to get those female readers. But yeah, I'm glad you liked it. That's wonderful. I'm glad you picked it up. Because a lot of women tell me that they saw it and they immediately thought hard sci-fi, even though, you know, obviously,
that's
you know,
weird.
My name is Jennifer.
That is a thing.
Yeah, so I don't know. Well, so they have different expectations. But when I look at the covers of other books, sci-fi books that I think are kind of comparable, like Rachel Aaron's Fortune's Pawn, Rachel Bach. She goes by Rachel Bach when she writes sci-fi. There's always a woman on the cover. Anna Geare, her Samantha Jax series. Always a female figure on the cover. So, yeah, I don't know. I've thought about it. I mean, Fluency's been out for almost a year now. And I've thought about changing the cover. But I don't know. It's a tough call.
Never judge a book by its cover, though. That's the thing. It's like, if it's recommended for me, I pull it up, I read the description, and then I look at the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how I decide whether or not I'm going to buy a book. And read it.
Right.
I don't know. That's my criteria. I don't know what other people's criteria is. And how many women are actually reading sci-fi? I mean,
I don't know. That's one of the things I ask myself. I think a lot of women left sci-fi reading because they got frustrated with a lot of the dry, hard sci-fi that's been published, especially in the 80s and 90s. It was really hard to find
something relatable.
Right, right.
That wasn't from a very penis-driven perspective.
Exactly.
And it's difficult.
The first time I read something where I was like, holy shit, maybe I can write a book that would be published, was when I read Anna Geare, Grim Space. I read that, and it's about Samantha Jax, and she's this kick-ass female who's got tons of issues. She's like an anti-hero. And I was like, God damn it, I can totally relate to this. If she can write this and be traditionally published, maybe there's hope for me.
Cool.
And that was right before I started writing again. And I have to say that probably was a big contributor to me thinking that maybe I could do it too. Because prior to that, I would start a book. I don't want to name names because I'll just get people totally pissed at me. But I would start a book and I'd be like, God, this is so dry.
Yes, yeah. It's too technical.
It's too, and none of the people have real feelings. Like they're just sort of marching. They're martinets.
They're just robots.
Yeah. Well, and part of that is that, I mean, as much as I love Star Trek, there's a very strong influence of this regimented military thing where if you're gonna write sci-fi, you've got to throw in this, you know, this military aspect to it,
right?
You know, or if you don't go that route, then you just spiral into any which way you want, and then you're, you know, dealing with all this nonsense. I think your book is really relatable.
It's got a kind of a military background to it, but
I actually contemplated making the characters be more independent, like not related to the military, but then it didn't really make sense in that context that I'd created. So I thought about having it be an independent person funding the mission. And that was really strongly part of the early development of the novel. And then I was actually going to have one of the characters be like, you know, the guy that owns SpaceX. Like right now I'm, you know, that type of dude who like who has all the money, he can make this happen, and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So that yeah. was originally going to be part of it. And then after a while, I was just like, but this doesn't make sense in the greater concept of what I've created. So I had to go back and revisit the NASA stuff and and really study astronaut life. Now once I'm away from that, I'm in Remnants, that's become, moot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the military aspect of it is gone at this point.
Well, and even in the book, you know what? Here, let's pause for a second. Let's go ahead and, without spoiling anything, in your words, go ahead and let's give our listeners just a little bit of a summary of the
what
book.
What is Fluency about?
In a world. Yeah.
No, Fluency is about Jane Holloway, and she is a linguist who has had. A lot of experience learning new languages. In fact, that's what she studies. She studies, she's studying languages that are about to go extinct in Canada among the sort of tribal mm-hmm. cultures there.
Sure.
And she grew up with parents who were tour guides. And so she went around the world as a child picking up a lot of new languages. So she's developed this sort of instinct about languages, and that ends up serving a purpose later in the story.
Right.
She is recruited by NASA because she's one of the top linguists in the world and has had experience in situations where there's no language in common. So there was an expedition that I mentioned that is based on a real expedition that an actual person went on. To the Amazon, to a remote tribe there that had no outside contact with the outside world, and so there were no words in common. And so he had to start from scratch. I think the guy that actually did this was talking about how he was scratching things in the dirt drawing things in the dirt with a stick to try to learn concepts and new words. And so basically I based Jane loosely on him. So she's recruited by NASA because of her expertise to go to this derelict spaceship that they've been watching for decades, but didn't really feel like they had the technology to really reach it without loss of life. Until that point, they reached a point where they realized that an asteroid was probably going to be obliterating that ship, and they only had two chances to actually get to it, because the way that the solar system works is that there are launch windows when things are lined up. So there were only two opportunities to go to what they were calling the target. Mm-hmm. And Jane is put on the first of those two missions. And so her getting there and expecting to be like, because this ship never moved, never produced any kind of radio signal, never, there was nothing happened. It just seemed to just float in orbit. They assumed that it was derelict or that it was just some kind of remote way station of some kind.
Right.
And so they just assumed that no one was there and that Jane would be there to translate any symbols in any language that was on that ship so that they could learn from, learn from that technology.
And mm-hmm. possibly operate it and save
it. Right. Bring it back home so that they could...
pick it apart, study it.
Study it. Yeah, it's like we do lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the idea behind it. And then when they get there, they do find that they don't run across anyone, but things are just not what they think that they should be.
Mm-hmm.
So when they first get their lights come on, and they weren't expecting that. Mm-hmm. And
it's phenomenal. You have to read it. Everybody listening, you just have to read this book. I'm sorry. You totally have to read this book.
Well, mm-hmm. the most interesting part is that there's telepathy involved, which...
Yes. So cool.
So the alien just starts speaking to Jane, but only...
Oh my gosh, you told people there's an alien. Stop it. Now you're spoiling your own book. That's it.
That's in the description of the book.
Oh. Okay, fine.
But yeah, someone says to her, "You are home." And she's like, "What?"
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of like going on in Jane's head at that point. Like, am I hallucinating this? Is it the stress of this 10-month journey like getting to me, or is this really happening? And then, and she's so unsure of herself and what, and she's, they're under a lot of stress, and people mm-hmm. who criticize the book don't really realize how much stress is involved with that kind of a distance.
Right.
10 months in a capsule the size of a minivan.
Exactly. That's how big it was. I couldn't really understand.
I say in the book that it's the size of a Winnebago. But okay. In actuality, if someone really were doing that journey, it would be the size of a minivan. So,
wow.
Yeah, there's not a lot of space.
There's not a lot of space.
Six people.
Yeah. And so they're basically shifting around in this space, like trying to.
I love your description of how they go to the bathroom. Like, there's a curtain.
Yeah.
And so there's no privacy.
Right. And what I don't talk about, but that is actually true, is that it's vacuum assisted.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
These poor
That's
people.
Not fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
No, please, I love that. I mean, it's obvious reading it because, I mean, when I was a kid, I wanted to go to space camp. Like, there was nothing else in the universe that was as important as going to space camp. So I read every like astronaut book and all the stuff about space camp. And, you know, and since then we have like a thing. My husband's kind of the same kind of astronaut nut. So we've read stuff about the missions and how the spaceships work. And we watch whenever there's, any kind of information out there that NASA tweets out or releases, you know, we're right. reading it. So I loved how accurate the things that you had mm-hmm. put in it were. It spoke to me.
Really, yeah, I tried to really get it as accurate as I could.
Yeah, you did.
It'd still be a good story.
Yes, it was great.
Because the problem with that is that astronauts, people complain that a lot of the characters are similar. But the reality is that the people that they choose for the astronaut program have a very particular personality.
Yes.
Correct.
And so I had to choose Walsh to be more like the sort of maverick astronaut from the mm-hmm. early days of the program.
Sure.
Like, you know, like the 60s. Mm-hmm. And he had to be more like that because he had to be different. And Alan Bergen had to be different too. Because otherwise they would have all been the same person.
Right.
So you know, I tried really hard to differentiate, but it was but going with that typical astronaut personality, which is very laid back, goes with the flow,
yep.
Doesn't create, you know, stress for anyone else.
Has to get
along. That's not a good story.
Get along well with others.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. No, and then I think you threw in an appropriate amount of conflict and mm-hmm. and stress and I don't know. I love the book. It was
good.
Great.
Yay.
So when is the next one coming out?
Oh,
I know.
I'm working on it right now. I'm working really hard. Okay. I was sick all winter, unfortunately.
Oh,
so I was still working on it every day, but it was really rough. I originally said June,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
but that's not going to happen. So I'm looking at late summer, early fall, and I'm no longer giving a date because it's just going to be when it gets there. So
okay.
What I recommend people do is sign up for my email alerts on my website so that they can be the first to know when it comes out.
And how do they do that?
Go to jenthulu.com, JenThulhu.com. And that's my website. And you can just click on sign up.
Perfect.
I love how I went to go sign up. And it had to confirm that I was a human. That to me was just perfect.
Awesome.
So I was like, oh, I am a human. Oh, this is clever. She's a Jen. I can tell.
Yep. That's me. Right.
Okay. So you said that when you get it done, then your book will come out.
Yes.
And I've heard other authors say that it can take between 9 and 12 months to go through the whole editing and printing right. processes and all that. So as an independent author, how does that affect you, your timetable?
Well, it's quite different. In traditional publishing, usually once you finish a book, it will take sometimes a year or two
mm-hmm.
to get it out. And so those people are actually lucky because by the time that their book comes out, they've already written another book or two.
Right.
And they can be having things in line to come out, you know, every 6 months or every year. Right. In my case, Fluency came out in June of last year. And the first, I would say, 6 months, I was just keeping up with the marketing and all of the other things. And here's the real kicker. I was writing another book at that point. Mm. I was about 50% into a book that was completely unrelated to Fluency. Okay. Because I didn't think Fluency was going to sell. So I was like, I'm going to be smart. I'm not going to write another book in this series. I'm going to write another book in another series and sort of try to cover more bases. Mm-hmm. And then I was planning to alternate between the two series and just keep it going for a while. And then maybe eventually I'd get noticed.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work out that way.
No, it didn't.
So here I am writing away on this other book. Fluency blows up. And all of this stuff is happening. I'm completely overwhelmed. I'm doing podcasts like this. I'm doing interviews. I'm doing all this stuff. And then I got an agent.
Good.
And he was like, so he's actually sold Fluency to Germany and Russia. Fluency is going to come out in German either at the end of this year or early next year.
Good.
From Random House in Germany. Which is amazing.
That's huge.
So now I'm technically a hybrid author. I'm both traditionally and independently published.
Right.
Okay.
So, so what's amazing? That's just amazing. But anyway, he was like, if you try to publish anything other than the sequel to Fluency right now, you are going to ruin your career.
Yeah. That's good advice.
He's like, you stop what you're doing right this minute and start writing the sequel to Fluency. And he was like, and I want synopses of the next two books.
Oh,
because I'm selling it as a trilogy.
That was genius.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy.
He's really smart. He's one of the best agents in the freaking business. I'm so lucky that I found him.
Good.
What's crazy about that is that I did try to sell Fluency traditionally and got no nibbles. None.
Huh.
No nibbles. Everybody ignored me. No one answered my emails. I got nothing. And then all this happens, and then basically I cold call one agent, and he's like, yeah, okay. There was no question like, maybe I will, maybe I won't. It was more like he was romancing me.
That's awesome.
Wow.
This is a freaking sea change. This is amazing. That was amazing.
I like this.
Yeah. I did like that. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I can imagine.
So, yeah. So, what was the question?
You answered it. So I mean, it's just different. But
you published your book. You published Fluency independently.
Right. And so, basically, that first 6 months, I was writing the other book. And when I got my agent, he told me that. Well, then I actually, for like at least 2 or 3 weeks, I was stubbornly continuing to write the other book. Because
you're a Jen.
Yep. Well, I was in the middle of a freaking book, and it was amazing, and I was enjoying it. And I was like, this is so much better than Fluency. Oh, my God.
And the thing about writing, too, is that you can't just put yourself in the mindset to just do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have to, work your way into that.
I had to adjust.
I had to adjust.
And so that took some time. And then I wrote, then I took a few weeks, a couple, maybe even a month or more, to write synopses for the next two books, which I had sort of general ideas for, but I kind of knew where I was heading, but I hadn't fleshed it all out in black and white. So I had to do all that and make it appealing to, publishers so that my agent could sell it. So that took a long time. And then there were other things that came up. I started getting invited to anthologies. And I was just like, well, I can't. I was invited to an anthology with Hugh Howie, and I was like, I'd be a freaking idiot if I turned this down.
Right.
So I went ahead and wrote a short story for that, which turned out to be more like a novelette.
Now is that The Grove?
That's The Grove.
Okay, I haven't read that yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Just things went. Things just snowballed. And so basically, at this point, I'm working like really hard on Remnants, but I've just now gotten to the point where I can devote myself full time to it. And all the other stuff is at the background. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going to, by the end of this year, I will have been in 3 anthologies. Wow. And getting invited to do these things is such an honor. I mean, it's so exciting to see my name right up there on the top tier of names with you, Howie. And I mean, I loved Wool. That's one of my favorite books. And so I was just like, oh my God. it's just, I still feel like I'm still pinching myself. I'm still like, is this really happening to me? Sometimes I feel like it's a dream and I'm just going to wake up, but it's been amazing.
It's pretty awesome.
That is awesome.
We are very excited for you. So when you do finish Remnants, it's going to go to an editor and then it's just going to, like, I guess what we're biting at is once you finish it.
Oh, how long does it take?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I anticipate it taking a month or two just to do the editing. Okay. I have more than one editor because you really need more than one level of editing.
Mm-hmm.
First, I'll send it to a content editor who will sort of evaluate the novel as a whole and see, you know, are there any plot holes?
Right.
Are there any areas where I could have developed something more to make it even more special? Mm-hmm. Are there things that where I just went a little nuts and it made
need
me
to rein it
hold
in.
Back? Right.
Okay.
So all of those kinds of things he will look at. This dude that I work with actually used to work for Harlequin, so he knows mm-hmm. his stuff. And so he'll do that. And then from there, I will do all those edits, and then I'll send it to my line editor, who does a little bit of that stuff, but also just looks at every single sentence and says, is this grammatically correct? Is every word spelled correctly? And all of that stuff.
That is one thing I noticed in your book, and it drives me crazy with independent authors, is that they don't really get an editor.
Right.
So they just publish it with all these grammatical errors, spelling
right.
mistakes, wrong right. uses of there, and
right.
you, and your, and your.
I see how that stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as when I'm typing really fast and it's sort of stream of consciousness, it just, all kinds of things vomit out of my brain.
Right. It happens.
But. And when I go back to read, sometimes I'm so focused on concepts that I miss those things. Mm-hmm. Cognates are really bad for me. And I had a real problem with its and its for a long, mm-hmm. long time. And I still catch myself with or without the apostrophe, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm. I get
so
it.
So that's why you need a proofreader.
Exactly.
I spell weird wrong all the time.
Yeah, you always spell weird wrong.
I finally figured it out, but still, I spell it wrong. And the IE, man, it's a problem.
That's a word that I have problems with, too.
Yes! See, I'm not alone. It's a weird word. Seriously.
It is a weird word.
She sent me this message one time, and then she kept spelling weird wrong, and I sent it back. I go, I think it's weird that you keep spelling weird wrong.
And I said, I know it was underlined in red, but I was in a hurry, and I didn't click on it. I always spell it wrong. I just don't care. But, yeah. That's me.
So yeah, that all should right. take a few months, and then,
okay.
and then, but I'm anticipating late summer, early fall.
Perfect. But we're not really saying, so it's cool.
Right, right. I'm chugging through it now, and I'm giddy. I am today. I actually cried.
Oh no! Like in a good way?
Yeah, like something. Well, you know.
Oh no! No.
Do you want to give us a spoiler?
No. I'm going to go la 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 if you do.
No, I'm not going to give you a spoiler. But
okay.
It was something between Jane and Bergen that made me cry. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. My gosh.
And I was just like, oh, God, why can't they just get it right?
Well, they could. You're the writer.
But you got to.
There's no story.
Exactly.
But you got to let your characters lead where they're going to go. I mean, I get
right.
it.
They know what they want, but sometimes there's somebody else who just gets in the way.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. It sounds like a spoiler.
This is going to be so good. I can't wait. I want to talk to you for like the rest of the night, but we're
for the next 3 hours.
I know, but we're kind of at our hour mark here.
Okay.
So actually, we're just over. So maybe what we can do is whatever we didn't cover at some point, you know, maybe when you finish Remnants, we'll bring you back on.
Awesome.
And,
yes.
We can talk about whatever we didn't cover. I don't know, you're circling stuff. Is that okay with you?
I'm going to, these are questions we're going to save for next time. I'm
okay,
circling.
Cool.
Okay.
Because I don't know. It was really, really, really super great to have you on. Is there anything that you want to share before you go?
No, I think I'm good. I mean, I hope that, you know, people read The Grove.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's actually a good entry point. I'm trying to get people to read that first, actually, to see what my writing is like. And then, because it's a low cost entry point. It's so only 99 cents.
What's when awesome you, about... when you, if anybody were to subscribe on your website, did I read that wrong?
Yes, they do get The Grove for free.
You get a free copy of The Grove.
Yes.
Yeah. So I haven't read it yet because I just subscribed, but I'm going to do that.
That's right. So yeah, that's, I'd forgotten about that. I just set that up a few days ago.
Oh, good.
Now, is that just the print version, or because I know you said that you recorded an audio version of it?
Oh yeah, that's the ebook. The audio version is available on Audible, and that was just something I did on. I have a background in theater, so I really have wanted to try narrating audiobooks for a long time, and in fact. Right before Fluency launched, I was looking into becoming a narrator to supplement my income because I didn't think that Fluency was going to do anything.
Oh my gosh.
Crazy.
So that was something that I was looking at as an alternate source of income so that I could stay home and not have to go work for the man.
That's awesome. I'm going to make my husband get it on Audible because he doesn't
read
books,
but he will do audiobooks.
Yeah, I love audiobooks. That's the only way I can fit a lot of reading in.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I can see that, but I'm the opposite. It irritates me because I'll be listening, and if somebody doesn't read it the way that I would have read it, I'm like, really?
That's just ruined it for me.
I do get burned sometimes by narrators that I don't like, but generally speaking, it doesn't detract too much from my enjoyment of a book.
That's
even if I don't like the narrator.
Mm-hmm. I'm just a snood, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, everybody's got their own thing.
Right? And my husband has a huge commute, so he gets all the audiobooks. Like he's got yours, Fluency. Got that.
That's Susanna Burney. I actually hired her to do that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah, and the Grove was an experiment, and. It's hard to say, but it seems like it's being well received and people are enjoying it. It seems like the reviews have been pretty good so far. So awesome. I didn't screw it up too badly. But it's about an hour. So it's
okay.
Yeah, okay.
It's not very expensive, I don't think.
No, it's fine.
I'm gonna read
buy
that
all of
tomorrow.
Jen's books. Yay! Go find her Stargate fan fiction, start there.
It's on my website. Yep.
Awesome.
But we really appreciate having you on.
So we have one final question for you, Jen.
Hey.
If you could rule the world, what would your first decree be?
Let's see. I guess I would just find all the social justice warriors and appoint them to my cabinet.
Oh, nice.
That all those people, I would say, let's do this thing. So that would be my first decree.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm proud of being a social justice warrior, personally. As a woman, it only makes sense.
That's brilliant.
But yeah, I'm for everybody just being happy and working together. So
I love that.
Peace.
I absolutely love that.
Yep.
So that's I think brilliant. since we did kind of like our full time during this interview, we're just going to have you stay with us for a second.
Okay.
We're going to sign off the way we normally do. And if you want to throw in anything at the end, that's cool. Otherwise, we're just going to go.
Cool.
Is that cool?
Austin Ground. Sure.
All right. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. Jen, thanks for being on the podcast. And don't be lazy.
Don't be selfish. Read Jen's book.
And read Jen's books. There you go.
Yay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Night.